Hello, everybody. Welcome into episode 4 of the Young Lads Podcast. Harris Eisenberg coming at you, joined as always by Peter DeFee. Was a semi-action-packed week, semi-action-packed holiday week, I'm sure for everybody, celebrating Mother's Day. We are recording on this Monday night, the 15th of May, and you know, to be quite honest with you, we like to be honest with our viewers up in front right away. So we are going to be honest with you. This will be a shorter episode. We do know there were some important series around, but, you know, as I've said to Peter multiple times in our time working with the Tampa Bay Rays, I'm going to use the M word. We were very busy this weekend celebrating our mothers and Mother's Day. So, Peter, how was your celebrations this week, and how you doing?
Yeah, first of all, happy late Mother's Day. I know everybody's going to be listening to this. We're recording it on a Monday, but everybody's probably going to be watching this or listening to it, however they're going to consume this, on either Tuesday or Wednesday. So happy late Mother's Day to everybody. But yeah, my Mother's Day was good. Spent the Saturday of Mother's Day weekend coaching. And I know we do our young lads, you know, young lad of the week, and, you know, kind of teasing that. I got my team that I was coaching is going to be part of my young lad. I'll tell you why a little later on. But then Sunday we went to a very nice restaurant and just kind of, you know, actually no, Saturday we went out. Sunday we just went to my grandmother's house and you know, had some food and watched game 7 of the Sixers Boston Celtics series, and then we also watched a little bit of the Rays game, and yeah, that was the extent of my baseball weekend, watching the pros at least. But yeah, other than that, my Mother's Day, or I should say my mom's Mother's Day, was perfectly fine, I think.
Like it went well. Yeah, you know, that's a good thing. You know, being 1,000 miles away, not ideal to spend my mother's and grandmother's and aunt's Mother's Day without them. But you know what? Made some phone calls, even gave them a shout out on the air, and it was greatly appreciated. So happy late Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. But now let's get into the baseball. And it was a really important series, again, because the Rays did play the Yankees once again over the weekend, this time at Yankee Stadium. And the New York Yankees came to life a little bit this weekend, and they even came alive tonight, and we'll get to that later. But the team split the 4-game set, 2 apiece, and I kind of want to start on the Rays side first. So we get some big news early in the series that Drew Rasmussen hits the 60-day IL. And so now if you look at it, all these pitchers that have gone down for the Rays, Rasmussen's down, Springs is down, Glasnow is down, Garrett Clevenger just went down with an ACL injury, so he's out. Pete Fairbanks is still working his way back from injury. So
actually,
that's
Pete
a lot
Fairbanks
of firepower.
Just got reinstated. So he'll be in Queens, right? City Field's in Queens?
City Field, yep.
Yeah, so he'll be in Queens tomorrow night. He just got reinstated. They just sent down Chris Mueller, or Mueller. I don't think it's Chris. I don't think it's Mueller. I don't remember how they pronounce
Definitely
it.
Definitely not Chris Mueller or Chris Mueller, the great director of broadcasting.
Of broadcasting, our former boss. So hopefully
yeah,
he's doing
well.
We
do wish it was Chris. We do wish it was Chris Miller, but Chris Mueller is the victim of Pete Fairbanks coming back. So, but that's good news though that Pete Fairbanks is coming back. They get a little bit of firepower back, but ultimately in the starting rotation, which is what we're going to kind of talk about here. The Rays are kind of down some pretty big arms, and I know Kevin Cash loves the opener, and he's kind of the innovator of it, and it works. Don't get me wrong, it does, but now you got guys pitching in bulk, like, you know, Josh Fleming is kind of the guy who's now in that role where he's pitching in bulk, where last year it was Ryan Yarbrough who would pitch in bulk, and, you know, that kind of was up and down in a way, and, you know, Josh Fleming earned his spot in the rotation, you know, last year and even in 2021, but this year it's a little bit different, just, you know, with the expected depth that the Rays were supposed to have. So before we get into the series, I'll just ask this question right off the bat to you, Peter, being down there in Florida and being a little bit closer to the Rays than I am. Are the Rays going to have enough firepower on the mound to start games to kind of get through this little stretch before Rasmussen and Glasnow are able to get healthy?
I think they will, just because I don't think that Neander and Bendix are going to stand pat. Because the way they started off, they were 13-0 to start the season. They're 31-11 now. It's like, I don't think you can just go like, oh, we lost Springs, we lost Rasmussen. You know, we're just going to go with Glasnow, McClanahan, Eflin, and then hopefully Taj Bradley can continue to be the way that he was when he first came up and pitched against the way that he did against the Reds and against the Astros, which were two really good games. But, you know, he's still a rookie. He's going to have an innings limit on him. So if you waste all those innings, or I shouldn't say waste them, but if you use all those innings in now June and July and August, there's not going to be a whole lot of innings that he can use in September and October. So I don't think that Peter Bendix and Eric Neander are going to just stay pat. I think they're going to go after somebody. Who that somebody is, I don't know. He even told, you know, Mark Topping, he's like, you know, when was the last time somebody made a big name trade in May? And Topper kind of went to him and was like, you guys did in 2021 when you traded Willy Adames for JP Fireisen and Drew Rasmussen. So we've seen the Rays do it before. And of course, that opened up a lane for, you know, Wander Franco. They didn't bring him up right away after that. They brought up Taylor Walls, who had a big grand slam in yesterday's game, or I should say, in Sunday's game, now depending on when this podcast, when I decide to record it, because it's currently 10:42 my time. But, you know, I think they're going to go after somebody. And I mean, looking at the standings now, maybe that someone is in an NL Central uniform right now, just because the NL Central is bad right now, just going off the top of my head. Maybe a Jordan Montgomery, a nice left-handed arm, because right now, if you get Rasmussen and Glasnow back, you have Rasmussen, Glasnow, Eflin, Bradley. Those are four right-handed starters. The only real left-handed starter that you have now, because Springs is down, is McClanahan. So do you try to add a Jordan Montgomery, who's a left-handed arm that, you know, has kind of struggled a little bit this year, but showed that once he got moved from New York to St. Louis last year, that he was a really good arm. You know, do you try to go after somebody from Kansas City or Chicago? I don't know who you'd want to try to get, because I would say Lance Lynn from the White Sox, but he's having a down year. You're not going to get rid of Cease. That's going to cost way too much to try to get Cease. Excuse me. You're not going to try to get Giolito, because, again, it's going to cost way too much to get Giolito, because he's the only pitcher really performing for that team. And, I mean, maybe a James Caprillion from the Athletics. Maybe a Blackburn from the Athletics, but I don't know. I don't know how much stock you want to take in them. And then, I mean, I don't know if you can really say the Nationals either, because they're 18-23 right now, and they might still feel like they're in some type of a wild card push. They're 2.5 games out of the third wild card spot. But other than that, I don't know if Cincinnati has, you know, because they got Ashcraft, but he's going to be a staple in that rotation. You got Lodolo and Green that are going to be staples in that rotation. So I don't know who from the Central you're going to give up, because Pittsburgh now all of a sudden has a resurgence this year. I know they're in second place now, just looking at the standings here, but you know, you're not going to get Rich Hill from them because they feel like they can make some type of a playoff push. And then maybe somebody from San Fran or Colorado. But again, Kyle Freeland from Colorado has been very up and down. And I don't know what his contract is this year. It might be a little too expensive for Rays taste. But that's a long-winded way of saying that I think, yes, they do have the starting pitching depth, but I do expect them to get some type of, I don't think frontline starter is the right word, but like some type of reinforcement, some type of Zach Eflin, Drew Rasmussen, Jeffrey Springs type level reinforcement into that starting rotation by the trade deadline.
I think whoever you bring in is going to be successful, even if it's a guy who's having a down year like Lance Lynn, just because of the great track record that Kyle Snyder has with his pitchers. I will say this. Don't bring up James Kapilian. He's got an ERA north of 10. He's 0-3.
Yeah, that's what...
And for, as a Yankee fan, who a guy of this guy was so highly touted, and we traded him in the Sonny Gray trade, kind of glad we did, because he's downright he's awful. But not the
really.
Point.
I only brought him up because he's the only starting pitcher that I remember from,
that you know on Oakland
that I know on Oakland. other than Waldurchuk, but he's, you know, 20-something years old. Fujiyama's a young pitcher too that Oakland's probably going to want to try to develop. So Kapilian was the first person that came to my mind.
Develop and trade, baby. That's Oakland's motto. But I think the Rays are going to have to grind it out for at least another 6 weeks before any serious move can be considered here. I think it's too early. Like, again, you know, yeah, Jordan Montgomery would be a nice piece and he's got experience working in the AL East, but are the Cardinals really willing to give up on their season right now, especially after they just swept the Red Sox? I don't know. You know, the Cubs also is an interesting situation where, you know, I know they love Marcus Stroman, but again, he's only got one more year left on his deal after this. And, you know, he's a guy who's very fiery. He may not mix with the Rays very well in terms of culture-wise because he's just a wonky dude. But, you know, that's a possibility where if the Cubs are, you know, if they have a rough next couple of weeks and they're kind of out of it when you get into June, are the Cubs going to go sell again, which would be a really big disappointment. That's a possibility as well. I just think it's so early to kind of figure out who's going to go where. But I do like the idea of Jordan Montgomery for sure, just because, you know, I thought he was a great Yankee, to be honest with you. I thought he was very serviceable as a 4 or 5. And, you know, I didn't like the fact that they traded him away, although I like Bader. But, yeah, you know, this guy can prove he can have success. He's a good left-handed pitcher. He's got mixed stuff. That's definitely a possibility. But in terms of actually a target, and I think we know also the fact that the Rays, they target guys but are always not willing to give up a premium trade offer in order to get certain guys. I think it's just it's always hard to tell who the Rays could go after, especially like look at last year. You know, the Rays were in on Wilson Contreras, but were unwilling to give up, you know, one particular prospect in order to get Contreras. You know, it's kind of the same thing probably like this year. You know, you're going to have to give up, you know, there's a prospect that's escaping my name, you know, like Curtis Meade could be a guy where if you want to get a good front of the line starter, you may have to go give up on Curtis Meade, who right now is a top 30 prospect in all of baseball. And if I'm Peter Bendix, there's no shot on earth that I'm giving up Curtis Meade for a guy who's basically going to be a rental until, you know, at the most they get Springs back in the middle of next year.
Yeah. And then another name that just popped up in my head while you were talking about Stroman, because I remember, I think it was the 2020 offseason. It was after that season that Alex Wood and Marcus Stroman were free agents. And I was like, guys, like, go get one of them, because Stroman just had a decent year going from Toronto to New York. And Alex Wood was coming off of a really good year with the Dodgers, but they weren't going to re-sign him. And then he goes to the Giants along with Kevin Gausman, and I mean, you saw the type of seasons that Alex Wood has had for the Giants these last couple of years. I think Stroman would be a good guy just because he is so wonky on the mound, and those are kind of the guys that the Rays go for. But I think even Alex Wood too, because he's got such a weird arm slot. If you remember, he comes like not exactly sidearm and not really three quarters. It's kind of like that in between, and he kind of like herky jerky with his windup. So I think those two guys would actually fit good, but I think left-handed starter would be something that maybe they could go after, especially if they have to play New York for a series, say, you know, for instance, you know, the division series or whatnot, something to neutralize those left-handed hitters, because if you can get somebody that can get in on right-handed hitters, it's a lot harder for right-handed hitters to hit home runs in that ballpark than it is for left-handed hitters. So maybe something to neutralize, you know, that. I know Fenway's a good right-handed hitting ballpark, but I don't know. I think another solid left-handed starter is exactly what the Rays could use, in like a Jordan Montgomery or an Alex Wood.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's something that they should target, be willing to target, but that's a little ways away from now. Obviously, trade deadline at the end of July. But let's go back to the action on the field at Yankee Stadium. Yesterday, Sunday, the Mother's Day, Rays get a win. Taylor Walls with a big grand slam. And again, Nestor Cortez just hasn't had it this year. We said it, you know, either last podcast or two podcasts ago. He simply just hasn't had it this year. And, you know, Taylor Walls didn't. It wasn't Cortez that he took deep, but still, I mean, good on Taylor Walls, too. I mean, he gets an opportunity to still play every single day now with Wander back and Bilal back. And kind of the situation where, like, you know, Isak Paredes is a nice player, but is he really an everyday guy? Not really. And Taylor Walls does have the best glove on the team. So you got Walsy playing third a bunch. And he comes through the grand slam. And now just like that, he's got 7 homers already. And he hit 8 all of last year. So he's been producing at quite a way better clip than he was last year. And everybody got on Taylor Walls for his offense last year. And, you know, it's a guy who played over 150 games and only hit .179. You know, it was a problem, but also the Rays weren't healthy. Now that they're healthy, and now that they've developed a guy like Walls, I think that could be a big piece for this team, especially with the depth. And, you know, Taylor Walls is a big reason why the Rays won on Sunday. And then the Yankees end up taking a couple games. Aaron Judge leading the way on Saturday, and Anthony Rizzo as well, which was huge. Rizzo on Saturday went 3-for-5. So that was a big day on his bobblehead day, by the way, which is also great. So, you know, the Yankees take 2 of 3, but it was a comeback win because the Rays were up 6-0. And you're thinking, you know, I didn't watch the game, but you're thinking 6-0, McClanahan on the mound. Like, this is a sure lock for the Rays. And then the Yankees finally break open. Aaron Judge, you know, when you sign a guy to a mega contract, you expect him to come through in situations. He, bam. 2 homers. Yankees end up winning the ballgame 9-8. And Yankees end up winning 6-5 on Friday, backed by Anthony Rizzo's 2 homers. So that's big. Rays did win the first game of the series 8-2. But now it seems that the power bats are starting to come alive a bit for the Yankees here. They're now 24-19. At the time of this recording, they had just defeated the Toronto Blue Jays 7-4. So they have now won, what is it? It is 4 of the last 6 that the Yankees have won. All but one of those games against interdivision opponent, which was that Oakland game that was played on last Wednesday. So, you know, Yankees starting to cook a little bit, 7 games back of the Rays for first. And, you know, in what is an AL East that's really tight, I'm sure you paid attention to the highlights. Just what'd you think of the series?
Yeah, well, going back to that Saturday game, I was coaching in the morning, came home, listened to it on the ride home. Saw that it was like 1-0 at the time. And then Yandy Diaz was up to the plate and I could feel myself like falling asleep. So I was like, oh, let me just stay up. It's a 1-0 game. It's really good. And then Yandy hits the grand slam. I was like, oh, that's perfect. It's 5-0. You know, I can just take a nap now. I go to sleep. I wake up at like 4:30 and all of a sudden it's 8-7 Yankees. It's like, what just happened? It was like one of those things, like when you wake up from a long nap and you're like, what year is it? It was like, what just happened in this game? And it's like, I found out later on from watching the highlights that McClanahan just had a rough 5th inning. And then all of a sudden, Judge hits 2 mammoth home runs in a 2-homer day. And then the Friday game, I was actually watching the Heat. Who did they play?
And the Knicks. The Knicks,
yes. The Heat-Knicks game and the Lakers-Warriors game with a couple of buddies of mine at a sports bar. And I was watching the Rays game as well, and I saw Josh Lowe hit the home run. I was like, oh, yeah, let's go. 6-5, We got Jason Adam on the mound, and then all of a sudden Rizzo hits a home run. And I'm just like, oh my God. And it wasn't even till like the short porch. It was a pretty decent bomb by Rizzo on Friday. And then the Rays end up losing, you know, 7-6 on that game. So bullpen kind of faltered a little bit during the series. Even on Sunday, Kelly gave up two runs to make it 8-7. It was 8-4 at one point, and Poche came in. He ended up giving up a run, but he didn't give up the hit that gave up the run. I don't remember who did. I think it was wasn't Clevenger.
So Adam gave up the homer to tie the game, and then
no on Sunday.
On Sunday. Sorry.
I know Poche came in, got a man on first, and I think they brought in Trevor Kelly.
Oh yeah,
they brought in Trevor Kelly. He gives up a base hit, makes it 8-5. So that run went on Poche, and then I forgot who gave up the other two runs. I think it was the other Kelly.
There's a lot of Kellys.
Either way, and then the ninth inning I watched, and just like Jason Adam, I thought Aaron Judge tied it. I thought that was gone as soon as it left the bat. And even Adam like bent over and was like, oh my God, what did I just do? And then all of a sudden Siri just cams underneath it and it pulls a Ricky Henderson and just catches it and snaps his hand. I was like, oh, thank God, because that could have very easily been, if not 3 out of 4, a full 4-game sweep by the Rays, and you're just in cruise control in that division, especially against the Yankees. And the Yankees are faltering now. They're still in last place. And I think they're 21-18 now. Got to look at their standings.
So it's 21-19, I believe, and they're in fourth.
So Sox, they could have very easily been, they could have very easily have been well under, or a couple of games under 500, or at least at 500. So I'm not going to say the Yankees got lucky. They just got some good timely hitting, you know, from the sixth inning on.
I can agree with that 100%. And, you know, you look at some of the falters that the Yankees have, and their weaknesses showed, especially in that game on Sunday. The bullpen, once again. I'm sorry, but Wandy Peralta's not a closer. It's just not. Clay Holmes is a guy who's expected to be the closer, and you're putting him in situations where he's not. And, you know, he got out of a jam nicely on Saturday, which was an awful call, by the way. Yandy Diaz comes with the bases loaded. And basically similar deja vu from what happened last year at the Trop when Clay Holmes was pitching to Yandy and the pitch was clearly below the knees, would have tied the game. But umpire called it strike three. Yandy throws a fit, whatever. This time on Saturday, Yandy doesn't throw a fit, but that pitch was way outside. And the Yankees get a break again in this Yankees-Rays rivalry over the last few years, and they were able to take advantage of it. But again, Clay Holmes is also a guy where he just hasn't produced enough this year either, so you're relying on Ron Marinaccio, and I like Ron. I think he's got good stuff. He's got a wonky delivery too, but you know he's not a closer either. So like, who the heck is closing games for you? You know, if Wandy Peralta is your last resort guy, it's just so confusing to me. Like, who actually is the closer? Because everyone expects Clay to be the guy, and they just keep throwing Wandy out there for the ninth inning. And Wandy's been solid, but it's just Wandy Peralta is not a closer. You know, I was thinking about it before he came on here. You look at some of the strengths of the Yankees teams over the last 5 to 6 years, and the strengths have been the bullpen. You know, ever since 2015, from 2015 to 2021, the Yankees' strength has always been the bullpen. And now it's like they rely always on their offense, and now their starting pitching's injured, and their pen's injured too. I mean, I was discussing it with somebody. Like, look at the 2022 trade deadline. Lou Trevino now is going to Tommy John surgery, which I don't know if that happened last week or was it at some point this week, but we failed to mention it if it happened last week. But Lou Trevino's headed for Tommy John. So there's another guy that the Yankees acquired from the 2022 trade deadline who's out. Scott Efros, Tommy John surgery, out. Trevino, Tommy John, out. Frankie Montas won't pitch this year. Everybody that they acquired at the 22 trade deadline is not actively participating in baseball activities right now, which is crazy to think about.
And even one of their big offseason acquisitions, Carlos Rodon. Carlos hasn't Rodon. Even picked up a baseball yet. Didn't even throw in spring training. He's got a bad back, and he's kind of just felt like he's excuse me. He's kind of just said, you know, whenever it feels right, I'll be back. But he's in jeopardy of not being back till like August or September himself. It's already the middle of May, and he hasn't even started a rehab assignment.
He didn't even pitch in spring training.
So you like that's you the have thing. To build him up.
He is nowhere close. Nowhere close. And everyone's like, oh, it's a little back injury. He'll be fine. And this was when the day, maybe the third day after pitchers and catchers reported. He never threw in a game in spring training. He basically is starting from zero. Zero. Like, there, you're going to have to start him rehab assignments. Probably those won't probably start until July. And those are going to start in Hudson Valley, in High A. Because this guy, he hasn't thrown to a batter since October of last year.
Yeah, and you got to think, if he starts in July, it's going to go the full month of July, and then maybe even some in August, depending on how fast they can build up his arm. And you're hoping that he can come back in the beginning of August and give you at least 10 starts the rest of the year.
And look at it. Right now, you're relying on Domingo Germán to be your number two starter, and he's either really, really good or really, really bad. And luckily, he's been really, really good for most of his starts this year. So I give him credit where credit's due. And Nestor, you know, like I said, just hasn't had it this year. He just hasn't. And Cole, you know, I give him credit. He's your ace. He's pitched like an ace. Even though, you know, his last start against the last two starts against the Rays, he hasn't been all that good. So, you know, is what it is. There's still plenty of time left. You know, we're only, you know, 7 weeks into the year. So the Yanks are in fourth, 7.5 back of the Rays. You know, I think this is an important series right now for the Yankees, too, where, you know, they take game one against Toronto. You have an opportunity, if you sweep the Blue Jays, to move in third. And, you know, you're cooking a little bit here. And you start to create separation from the basement team, which is Boston Red Sox. And they just got swept by the Cardinals. So, yeah, that's kind of my take on the Yankees.
They just lost to the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, did they?
During the taping of this episode. So they've lost now four in a row. They're 22-20, 9 games back of the Rays.
Okay. So, yeah, 4 in a row. That is the... That's the longest losing streak. Believe it or not, that is the longest losing streak in the American League right now. That includes the Oakland A's, who are 9-33.
And the Kansas City Royals, who are 12-30.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that if we could, because that is just... And we don't really know much about the Royals, honestly, but I think if there was a team that we expected to make a leap this year, it was going to be Kansas City. And they just... They just haven't. They're just, again, another bottom feeder in the West. And that's simply put, like, we can't get much into it other than the fact that, like, you know, they get a couple guys. You know, Zach Greinke comes back. Bobby Witt Jr. is a stud. Vinny Pascantino, you know, the Italian Stallion. Love him. MJ Melendez, Salvador Perez had a MVP-like season last year. So you're thinking, you know, you add a starter or two and everything will be fine. And the Royals are just, they're dreadful. They're so dreadful. And I think it's, you know, and I wanted to touch on this too, especially with the Central Division and how the Minnesota Twins, who are in first place, have a worse record than the New York Yankees right now, who are in fourth. And earlier this week, all five teams in the AL East had a better record than the first place NL Central Minnesota Twins. So, Peter, I'll ask you this because we don't really want to break down the Kansas City Royals. The Royals are a meh franchise right now. Is it time for a realignment of the divisions? Because remember last year, Baltimore, if Baltimore was playing in the NL Central, they make the playoffs last year, which is crazy to think about because nobody thought the Royals were going to be good last year. So,
yeah, that's
true. My point, the Orioles are a team that, you know, we've been at the top of the American League East for quite a while. We feel bad for the Orioles, right? In fact, we love the Orioles now because Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson are just two young lads who are young studs. So we like the makeup of the team. And, you know, you just look at this. You got Texas in first place in the West. Other than that, you know, all four teams, in fact, all five teams in the AL East have the same or better win total than the second place Houston Astros and the third place LA Angels, who are both at 22. So, again, I don't want to get into it because there's been so many discussions about it, but I think it's a valid question. You know, how do we make it a little bit more competitive for some of these teams in the East to actually stand a chance at making the playoffs?
Before I answer that, I'm just looking at the scores that have gone on in this game. And your St. Louis Cardinals, winner of at least four straight, probably a little bit more. Let's see. They've won four straight, beat the Brewers today, 18-1, and scored 10 runs in the bottom of the eighth. So I just want to put that out there. St. Louis Cardinals are going to the World Series this year.
Oh, God.
Just putting that out there. Let's see. Arenado hit a home run. You know, Gorman, Edmund, Kinsner. I mean, just Flaherty with
and now the guys are getting
an absolute
hot.
Gem.
Now so the guys are getting
I'm
hot.
I'm just gonna put it out there that the Cardinals are winning the World Series. They're winning World Series title number 12 this year. And you can't tell me otherwise because they just beat a team 18-1. And everybody knows that an 18-1 win in May means that you're going to the World Series and you're winning the whole thing. So you could thank me later. But to answer your question with the realignment, I think once we get another expansion team, whether that's in, you know, Nashville or Salt Lake City, I know Orlando wanted is gearing up for a baseball team to call them the Orlando Dreamers, which is one of the worst names ever. And I don't think
we were discussing the Disney names the last episode, and I wanted to get your take on that. So you're out on the Dreamers.
I'm out. No, it's got to be like the UCF Knights are good, and like you got to do something like castle themed. Like the Orlando Magic is a perfect name for that because of especially how their old school uniforms looked, where it looked like the middle of the uniform had the Disney for people that have watched Disney movies all their lives like I have, how Tinkerbell goes over the castle, it had like the little thing going over the Orlando Magic. That was perfect name. UCF Knights going along with the castle theme, perfect name. Orlando Dreamers, no, throw it away. You never deserve an MLB team after that. But I think once you get another team, because like Nashville, yeah, can go in the Central, but then you can kind of, they're kind of like, Nashville is almost like Eastern Central. So like you could put them in the Eastern region as well and still have it make sense. So I think you'll get some type of realignment where maybe it's like you have your Southern teams. We're kind of like it's basketball, where you have your Southern division and then you have your Northeast division, you have your Southeast division, you know, maybe like your Southwest division too. I kind of have to look at a map now but then you can have your Northwest division and stuff like that. And then you can have your true Central division, because everybody says that the Central division too, like the travel is 10 times better than all the other divisions. So maybe you can kind of do something like that. Let me look up a map real quick while you.
So take the map. I'm going to say two things after you're done studying the map. One, we're going to cancel the season here on the Orlando Dreamers before they even start, because that's atrocious. And the fact that you got some clowns who are just like, oh yeah, steal the Rays and put them in Orlando. You're an idiot if you think that. That is 100% not happening. That's number one. Number two, if I'm going to pick two cities to expand to, if I'm MLB, Nashville, I would say, is one of them. And also, Charlotte, North Carolina, let's throw a little love to them, because, you know, that's a team that's been in the mix for a big league club for a while. And, you know, the Carolinas don't have Major League Baseball. There's a lot of minor league baseball in the Carolinas. And we all know that North Carolina, and I'm going to toot my own horn here, North Carolina is the mecca of college baseball. Sorry, Louisiana and Texas. But, you know, that's a team that has been thirsty for years for Major League Baseball. So those are my two picks for two cities that deserve to be expanded to if you're Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the map here, too, and it's kind of like, for the audience, I'll try to put it up there. That's what you're working with the MLB map. So it's a little harder than I thought to kind of put everybody in a region, because really the only people in the Southeast region would be Atlanta, Tampa, and Miami. So there's a bunch of Northeastern regions, and the Central region is fine. And then I guess you can kind of put, you can kind of have like a Western region with all the California teams, plus Colorado maybe and Seattle. So it's a little harder than I thought it was going to be. But also, you know, with the balanced schedule too, if you add two more teams, I think you're going to be able to get an even better balance because you're taking away even more divisional games. So now we're at 10 divisional games, right? So you can probably... No, we're at 14. Because you play 7 at home, 7 on the road. So you could probably take that down from 14 to 10. And there's an extra 4 games that you play against somebody. So it might be a little more parity if you do that as well. Because that's an extra 4 games that, say, the Minnesota Twins have to play against the Boston Red Sox or the Houston Astros or something like that.
Yeah, by the way,
actually, that'd be 4 games that they have to play against the expansion team, so never mind.
By the way, the Montana Boise area is looking a little lonely. I just wanted to put that out there. But yeah,
Montana,
so that's kinda,
Montana can stay lonely.
Yeah, that's true. To be honest with you, Peter, I don't even know a major city name in Montana. Like, I couldn't tell you. Like, you even worked in that state. I don't even remember what city you told me you worked in.
Yeah, so for the audience, I lived in Montana for about 5 months from Halloween night till March 7th, which was my last day that I worked in Montana. I worked in Havre, Montana, but you have Missoula, you have Great Falls, you got Helena, you got Butte, you got Dillon.
It's a lot of cities that I don't think
Bozeman,
anyone will ever visit who listens
well,
to this podcast.
I know Bozeman and Missoula, which have the University of Montana and Montana State University. That game day was actually at this last year that me and one of the guys that worked at the radio station were going to go to, but we kind of just, you know, thought about it at the last minute. But you know, those are big college towns, so they'd probably thrive on a Major League Baseball team. But it's like you'd have to have a dome because it just gets way too cold. You know, even in April, it was -8 degrees out there when I was trying to, you know, pack my car to leave. So you'd actually have to have a dome up there, and I think it'd be a little too difficult.
Yeah, I agree with you. So that's where we are on the relocation and alignment. Let's just say where our teams are this week. Obviously, the Yanks are playing the Jays. The Rays will play the Mets for 3 games, starting Tuesday the 16th, for 3 games at Citi Field, which will be interesting. How about that? The Rays staying, 7 nights or 8 nights in New York? That is a lengthy trip in the city because they don't change hotels. They stay in the same hotel. No. They just charter over a different bridge to go to the different ballparks in New York. So that's a pretty cool trip.
I heard our friend Andy Freed, whose birthday, by the way, was on Friday.
He shares a birthday with my mother.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
But I heard Operation Shutdown was in effect for today. So,
yes.
And the Nationals beat the Mets, by the way, today 10-3. So that is just a poverty franchise right now.
I'm going to say one thing about the Mets, and then we're going to move on right away because I don't want to rant. I really don't. But call up Ronnie Mauricio. In fact, I highly recommend you do it. I don't understand. So they demote Ronnie Mauricio after spring training, and I understand he's a shortstop, and they got Lindor. I get it, right? But you got him, you got Mark Vientos, who continues to mash in AAA, and now you got Gary Sanchez, who signed to a minor league deal, and he's got a couple of homers in three games played for Syracuse. And I'm just going to pick on Mauricio for a second. Ronnie Mauricio is hitting .420 in the month of May with a homer and eight ribbies. And over his last six games, he has had multiple hits in five of them. The fact that this dude does not have a place in any major league lineup right now is beyond me. Beyond me. Because I understand he's a shortstop dude, but look at what the Mets did with Jeff McNeil, who was a natural second baseman. And in 2019, when the Mets got Robbie Cano, they stuck Jeff McNeil in left field, and he hit over 300. And then last year, you know, they finally brought him into second base after a month of dealing with Robbie Cano, and he won a batting title. So there's no problem sticking a guy in a position where really the Mets need it, because they stink. They're 20-22. They're in fourth place in the division. The Marlins are better than them, as the Marlins are in third right now. And yeah, they are a poverty franchise. Why? Because I don't understand why you go out and you sign all these pitchers, right? And everybody that you sign who has been healthy for most of their careers continue to get hurt. Now, Verlander's healthy, but now we go to Max Scherzer, who's got a little bug in his neck, and he's got to miss another start. So Scherzer's been suspended 10 games, and now he's missed a few starts due to his balky neck. So I don't know what the hell's going on there. They're rolling with guys like David Peterson on the mound still. They got Tommy Hunter in their bullpen, who hasn't been good since 2017. Like, this is just – and again, Edwin Diaz is down, so, like, you're kind of going closer by committee here. And, you know, David Robertson is solid. I'm a big D-Rob fan, but, you know, I don't think he's a guy that at age 37 should be closing games for a Mets team that is supposed to have Edwin Diaz, and he's done for the year. So just – The injury bug just never ends with this Mets team. I don't know what it is. It could be like that haunted hotel in Milwaukee that Mookie Betts refused to stay at, which I think is hilarious. But the Mets are just, I mean, this is a poverty franchise. It really is. I mean, when you lose a series to the Nats, it's a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, the Rays are going to see Verlander on Tuesday night, so we'll see if he's got anything left in the tank and if he continues to terrorize the Rays like he did in Detroit and Houston. So, but it's got to be tough being a Mets fan, just especially this year when you go all in on Verlander and you have Lindor and you have Scherzer and McNeil won a batting title and you got Pete Alonso and you got guys like Alvarez and Beatty and
You see Francisco Alvarez get picked off at first base with the bases loaded and two outs.
No, I didn't.
End an inning. He's dancing off of first base when the run doesn't even mean anything. It's like the second inning, and he gets back picked to end an inning with the bases loaded.
That's just the epitome of the Mets right there.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It doesn't surprise me. But yeah, we'll see how this series goes with the Rays. Hopefully they can at least take two out of three.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. That's kind of going to wrap it up on our MLB portion here. Again, we're going to keep this one a little bit shorter. But I think it's a perfect time to swing into college. And, you know, not much really going on. I mean, there was some significant movement in the top 25. LSU moves from 2 to 5. And for good reason, again, for the second weekend in a row, the LSU Tigers lose an SEC series, this time to Mississippi State, which, by the way, has lost 19 games in conference play. They are not the team that they were when they won the College World Series 2 years ago. They're a 500 ball club at best. They're terrible. And LSU loses the final two games of the series. The Sunday one sticks out the most because they were up 13-4, and they blow the lead, and they lose 14-13. So, and again, I'm going to say this. It's with these darn transfers that they bring in. And I'm not an LSU fan, but this is just the way that the game goes. And it frustrates me. You bring in these guys. You bring in Thatcher Hurd from UCLA. He starts out in your rotation, and now he stinks. You bring in Christian Little. He throws that 3 1/3 innings against Alabama. Then Bohannon made his bet, and Christian Little gets taken out of the rotation. And now the last 2 times he's come out of the bullpen, he can barely record it out. In fact, on Sunday, Christian Little got one out. He gave up three hits. He gave up four runs, walked one. And basically, he blew the game for LSU. And this is a guy who was a weekend starter at Vandy, and he comes in and he's your Sunday starter, and now he can't. It's like the ball is a beach ball to hitters when he's throwing the ball over the plate. So there goes that. Thatcher Hurd, who last year, I don't know why they think this is a good enough sample size to bring him in, but last year at UCLA, he starts six games. He's 2-0 with a 106, and he's now got an ERA north of 7, and he's now coming out of the bullpen. And in Saturday's game, he gives up five runs on three hits, and he can't record an out and takes the loss as LSU blows a 4-2 lead in the top of the eighth inning. So there you go. Two guys who you invested a lot in, you know, can't get it done when it counts. And now it makes you question a team who really has championship aspirations. Do they have enough? Do they have enough pitching? And in my opinion, you know, we talked about this last week. If somehow Wake Forest ended up playing LSU, Wake would destroy them with how good Wake's offense is. So that's kind of my shtick on LSU right now. They move down to number five. They got a gimme game in the midweek. They play McNeese tomorrow. And then I believe the Tigers finish up conference play. They play Georgia at Georgia before the SEC tournament, which, by the way, we're less than 2 weeks away from the SEC tournament, which starts it starts a week from tomorrow, Monday, the 23rd of May. So things are starting to get tight now. And LSU, for a team that I don't even know if they can make it to all the way to Omaha with the fact that they don't have the pitching to withstand. Even when you got Paul Skeens and Tommy White both winning national pitcher and player of the week, respectively, you just don't have enough. LSU had to use seven pitchers to get through the game on Sunday.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about that. I think it might have been the second episode where I was just concerned about that pitching, other than Paul Skeens and, like, you know, against Alabama where they almost lost that lead. I think they threw a freshman in there that gave up like five or six runs. And I mean, now good looking back at it, maybe Bohannon wanted that to happen. So who knows what was real and what wasn't. But that was the only thing that really scared me, because the offense is good. Tommy White, Dylan Cruz, those guys are mainstays in that lineup that are going to hit. Paul Skeens is going to be your Friday night starter, your game one starter in a regional or super regional or Omaha, wherever they make it to. But it's the second and third starter and whatever guys they're bringing out of the bullpen that are just not it right now. And like you said, Wake Forest, I think if you played a three-game series between Wake Forest and LSU, I don't see how Wake Forest doesn't sweep. I don't see how they scratch a run, because, first of all, game one is going to be like 1-0 between Skeens and Wake Forest's number one guy. And then you got two other games where LSU is going to have to try to find a way to outscore Wake Forest's offense right now. And I don't think anybody's going to do that. I think if you talk about the best offenses in the country, you start with Wake Forest, and then you go, maybe, you know, Wake Forest is top tier, and then maybe you could throw in like an LSU or a Vanderbilt or a Florida, you know, Stanford, something like that. But, you know, that's going to be the afterthought after Wake Forest.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of want to summarize just how human the LSU Tigers are. They're not even in first place in the West Division of the SEC Conference anymore. They're a game and a half behind Arkansas, who ends up leaping ahead of LSU in the top five. In the East, you have Florida at first place, and you have Vandy a game behind them. So that's kind of where LSU is right now. They've lost two in a row. Mississippi State, for reference, is sixth in the West Division. They are 8-19 in conference play and 26-24. Overall. So that's kind of where that stands in terms of LSU. They're human, and they move down to number five in the ranking. So that's kind of where they are right now.
How about the last two SEC national champions just absolutely selling their soul for national championships and then just like not doing anything the next season? Like Ole Miss after winning the Natty last year might not even make the tournament this year.
Doesn't look like it. I think they have the worst. They have the worst record in the SEC right now. Believe it or not, they are 6-21 overall, and 25-26 in conference play. 6-21 in conference play, 25-26 overall. They're the only team that is under 500 overall in the conference.
Yeah, so they very well might pull a Mississippi State and just not be able to defend their title after having such a bad year.
Yeah, definitely possible over there. SEC is going to be close. And now, it may not be entertaining college baseball talk right now, but it will be pretty soon with the conference tournament starting up, which will move us to the ACC. And last week I said there's a good chance Wake Forest won't lose another game this year. Well, Demon Deacons did lose. They lost last night to your Florida State Seminoles in a really entertaining baseball game, by the way. The Seminoles ended up winning, I believe it was 7-0. It was a walk-off. I forget what the score was.
It was 4-3.
4-3, yes, and that's correct. And
part of that is my young lad of the week. So I'm just going to put it out now. James Jordan Williams with the walk off. I'm just going to say it now just because we're talking about it. He's one of my young lads of the week, getting his first ever hit at Dick Howser Stadium against the number one team in Wake Forest, and they end up winning 4-3 in 9 in walk off fashion. And this is a Florida State team that officially isn't going to make the ACC tournament. It's going to be the first time in 47 years that they don't make the NCAA tournament. So it stinks as a Florida State fan not seeing this team progress the way that they should have this season, especially because the first major series of the season was against TCU and they took 2 out of 3. And you're riding high. They were in the top 25 at one point. I think they might have been 15th. I don't think that TCU series win put them up that much, but I think they started in the top 25 in preseason and then they got up all the way to 15th, and then just things snowballed. I mean, they looked terrible against Wake other than on Sunday. I believe they lost 2 out of 3 to Virginia Tech the week before. Duke cleaned them out. So Miami did as well. So they did not look good in conference play this year, which is a shame because, you know, they looked good in their non-conference schedule earlier in the season. So you thought maybe they'd write that momentum, you know, through conference play, but it shows you just how good the ACC was and just how much of a rebuilding / retooling. I really even don't think you can call it a retooling year. I think it was a rebuilding year with Link Jarrett. They had, you know, Nander back playing shortstop, being that team captain, but they were just missing that offensive firepower that they've had the last couple of years. And listen, their pitching wasn't all that great this year either. I mean, it was just a disappointing year all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for Wake Forest, I mean, they're not missing anything really. It's just their 7th loss of the year. It just goes to show how good they are. And that tournament will be interesting. A lot of movement in the ACC too, as well, in terms of, you know, teams possibly losing automatic bids. North Carolina sweeps NC State at Bosch Armor Stadium this weekend in Chapel Hill, which basically kind of just dooms the Wolfpack. And, you know, NC State has always been a super consistent team. They were in the College World Series 2 years ago, and then COVID they had to pull out the College World Series because of COVID. And last year, everyone thought that they kind of got screwed out of qualifying for a regional when they had Tommy White. And now this year, NC State, you know, they got a little desperate when they tried to kind of replace Tommy White. They just haven't had it this year. You know, that Parker Nolan just has not been all that what it is. Carter Trice, who's their left fielder, was kind of supposed to be the guy who's going to replace the power from Tommy White. He's a transfer from Old Dominion, and he's batting 8th. they're platooning catchers with Jacob Cozart and Cannon Peebles. Their starting rotation is just not the same. They got Sam Heifel, you know, in and out, you know, working in the bullpen and in the rotation at just random times. And yeah, it's just a weird year for the Wolfpack, a team that I'm personally a fan of, just a consistent NCAA regional team. Doesn't look like they're going to make it this year in terms of the way that they have played. I don't even think they've been in the top 25 at all this year. And it's not surprising. They just have not played good baseball whatsoever. It's not an Elliott Avent. It's just they haven't had the roster to compete with. You know, you look at the teams in the ACC that are in the top 25. Wake, North Carolina, Virginia, Duke. Duke, you know, 16th right now. Boston College, 22nd. It's just not the year that the Wolfpack thought they were going to have, and they definitely need to do some digging because, you know, North Carolina, even though they're not in the top 25 right now, could very easily be a top 25 team by the end of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at the top 25 teams right now. Just we kind of talked about this before we started the episode, but you look at the top 16 that are going to host a regional. As of right now, it'd be Wake Forest, Arkansas, Stanford, Florida, LSU, West Virginia, Clemson, Coastal, Carolina, Connecticut, Oregon State, Miami, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Campbell, East Carolina, Duke. Out of those 16 teams, you know, who would you say is in the most trouble of not making it out of their regional?
Oof. Really good question. Honestly, I think Vandy and I think Coastal Carolina, I think, are two teams that could have some trouble. Coastal, we've seen it. You put Coastal up against a team that is better than them nationally, they get smoked. Big, like Wake run ruled them a couple weeks ago. And I know Coastal beat them at home, but still, you know, kind of look at the environment in a way. I think Coastal could be in trouble, and it'll also be interesting to see how the Sun Belt Conference plays out. You're going to have two, maybe three teams out of the Sun Belt that end up, you know, playing in the postseason. So that'll be really cool. Vandy, I just think is overachieving this year. Like, this was a team last year that everyone was kind of shocked by, and the fact that, you know, they just, you know, didn't really go anywhere last year, and, you know, we're in the College World Series and ended up losing it. And, you know, you look why they're starting pitching, just, you know, they got a couple guys, but, you know, I personally don't think Vandy's like a difficult place to play, in my opinion. I know Enrique Bradfield's great and all, but I also look at it in terms of like places to play in the country. And, you know, I think people relish the opportunity to come to Vandy and beat the Vandy boys. So I think personally that Vandy might be in the most trouble.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm looking at – this is somebody that I talk about a whole bunch, College Baseball Nation. They had their field of 64 projections. This was 4 days ago. This was before the new rankings came out. Like, they had Wake Forest, LSU, and Vandy as their top three. And really, LSU had Texas, Arizona State, Sam Houston, kind of an easy – I guess, easier regional. Wake Forest had Maryland, Kent State, and Davidson. But then you got to, like, Duke. Duke had Tennessee, San Diego State University, UNCW. You get to Clemson's regional, who I don't even think now would be hosting one, as they fell out of the top 16. I have to look at...
They're seventh.
I think they fell out of they're seventh.
Yeah.
So they moved up. They had Clemson at 11 here with Auburn, USCB, or UCSB, who has always been tough, and then Army. And then Coastal Carolina had one of the tougher ones. They had East Carolina, North Carolina, and Samford.
Yeah, there's no shot Coastal's making it out of there.
You're talking about two powerhouses in East Carolina, who is right now projected to host a regional at 15, and then North Carolina is just, it's North Carolina, who I think right now would be on the outside looking in for the top 25. Yeah, they're not in the top 25, but I mean, North Carolina had a good season this year. So that's why I asked that question, because even though this is 4 days ago, I looked at Coastals and I'm like, ECU is tough, North Carolina is tough, and then Samford's always been a thorn in people's sides for a long time. And then I also was looking at just some other teams, and like Connecticut had Campbell in it, and Notre Dame and Central Connecticut. So, you know, that's why I asked, because I looked at Coastals and I'm like, I don't think they're getting out of that.
Yeah, North Carolina's got too much power in their offense. Matt Horvath, a lot of power in that bat. If it wasn't for Tommy White last year, Vance Honeycutt was winning National Freshman of the Year. I personally think Vance was one of the better players in the league last year. This year, he hasn't missed a beat. In terms of the other teams, Campbell right now is 14th in the nation, so I guess they're in line to host a regional. I think, you know, as much as I'm a Campbell guy, I think their inexperience is going to get to them, especially in a building where, you know, I love looking at atmosphere in terms of like how these buildings and how these teams are going to end up playing. And in a building that only sits, you know, a little more than 1,500, I just don't see how you get a powerhouse team from a Power 5 coming to town and wipe the floor with them. I just don't. I think Campbell, they just don't have the experience. Now, if this was last year's Campbell's team, where it had Zach Neto, who's in the big leagues right now, by the way, and had Thomas Harrington, who was an early second-round pick of the Pittsburgh Pirates, I would be saying, yeah, I'd be confident in this Campbell team, because Campbell did put up a fight in the Knoxville Regional last year against Georgia Tech. But this year's team, I know they're really good. I get it. I do. I just think they personally lack a little bit of the experience in order to, you know, they're a good club, but are they like super elite in order to be in a super regional? I really don't know. But it's going to depend on what draw they get.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got Dallas Baptist, Tennessee, Kentucky, Maryland, Virginia, Boston College, Southern Miss, Washington, and Oklahoma State, who are going to be two seeds in somebody's regional. And you get a Dallas Baptist or a Tennessee in your regional as a two seed, that's going to be a tough regional to get out of. And even Virginia's been playing really good baseball as of late themselves. And, you know, they got a good offense and some good arms on that mound. So, you know, in my mind, it's Coastal Carolina, Campbell, and I hate to say it, but LSU, if they don't win their first regional game, I think they could be in trouble too. That's kind of like a sleeper in my eyes. I think they'll make it to at least a super. And right now they're on track to host a super. But I mean, you're looking at if you can't win your first regional game, now you're coming out of the loser's bracket. And you got to rely on those transfers that you said that are just not performing in that bullpen. That's just not good right now.
So that's kind of, you know, I was hoping one of us would say, and I'm glad you did, because I'm looking at it now. And, you know, obviously Skeens is going to get the ball game one. Their number two starter is Ty Floyd. He's 6-0 this year, but has an ERA north of 4.5. So not great, but, you know, it could be better. He did have a good start against Mississippi State his last time out, threw 6 innings of 1-run ball, gave up 5 hits. But I look at the 2 starts before that against Alabama, couldn't even get out of the 3rd inning, gave up 6 runs on 6 hits. Then against Auburn, he couldn't get out of the 4th, and he walked 4 batters. He actually walked 4 batters against Bama too. So that could be a little bit of a problem too, where I think, you know, also Ty Floyd's a guy where, you know, he obviously – he's got experience. It's his third year at LSU, but he also has only been a starter for mostly of this year. You know, he's been a reliever for most of his time at LSU. And then after that, who do you go to? Like, you go to Christian Little. So, like, you can't go to Christian Little. It's been so bad. You can't go to Christian Little.
So perfect example. For argument's sake, let's put who do we want to put in their regional? Let's put Dallas Baptist in LSU's regional. I don't know if they're gonna be in their regional because they're 17th right now in the rankings, and I don't know how they're gonna put them as a two seed and how they're gonna reward or not reward LSU. But say Dallas Baptist wins that game one against Paul Skeens. Now you got a guy in Floyd with a 4.5 ERA that you're hoping gets you into at least the fourth inning and gives up less than four runs against you're going to have that four seed. Or no, it's going to be the, if you're a one seed, you're going to be playing a four seed in the first, regional. So say you lose to the four seed in that first game of the regional. Now you have a Dallas Baptist team, possibly, that you have to rely on your guy that's got a 4.5 ERA that hasn't been able to get you into the fifth inning in 4 weeks and has given up 4.5 runs on an average per game. And then you got Little, and then that bullpen. It could go down as a disappointing end to LSU's season.
I think it's on track for that, for sure.
And I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that LSU is going to lose their regional because, you know, maybe their offense overpowers everybody, the other three teams in their regional, and they go to a super. But then in that super, they're going to be facing possibly a top 16 team. And if you got to face a Vandy again, if you got to face a Florida, if you got to face, I keep forgetting who's in the top 16 now. If you got to face a Stanford, or you're not going to face Wake Forest, but if you got to face a Miami, a South Carolina, are you confident that Skeens and either Floyd or Little are going to get you those two wins? Because, I mean, we saw what happened last year with Tennessee against Notre Dame.
Couldn't tell you.
The guy that threw like a million miles an hour. Anyway.
Oh, Ben Joyce.
Ben Joyce, thank you. We thought Drew Gilbert and Ben Joyce were going to be the captains that led them through the whole entire season, and that their offense was just going to be there against Notre Dame. And I think they scored, 10 runs in three games? And just fell apart in game three against Notre Dame. So we could be looking at another Tennessee thing, or Tennessee with LSU.
It is possible. It's very possible. One more thing on college baseball before we move on. The CAA was a conference we mentioned last week. Northeastern going into the last time we recorded 1-8 in a row, and we're in the top 25. They're now out of the top 25, which means Northeastern's probably going to have to win their conference tournament in order to get in to the NCAA tournament, just because of, you know, CAA is, it's a mid-major, which also affects some other teams because, like you said, UNCW is projected to, you know, place and win that conference tournament. And also Elon at one point was projected to country at one point. And shout out to my High Point University Panthers for playing spoiler on Tuesday, defeating the Elon Phoenix in Elon 7-3, and basically dooming the Phoenix's hopes at possibly having any remote chance of qualifying for regional if Northeastern were to receive an automatic at-large bid because they were in the top 25. So shout out to you boys. They have won, by the way, 6 of the last 7. So roll Thurs, and the Big South tournament will be starting soon. So I'm excited for that. And the other conference tournaments will be starting soon. And by the next time we record this podcast, we'll have all the seeds. We're going to be reviewing, you know, the SEC and the ACC tournaments and maybe some other conferences as well. So again, one more regular season weekend to go, and then it's tournament time. And I think, you know, for you and I, who, you know, I wouldn't say are the biggest college baseball fans, but we definitely enjoy the excitement of it. You know, this is the time we really love to see. And next week will be the start of a really big stretch in college baseball for the next month.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, too, because during conference tournament season and like regionals is where a lot of prospects either improve their draft stock or just completely tank it. I mean, we saw what Dansby Swanson was able to do all those years ago in 2015 with Vandy, and how he just absolutely rose in stock after the last couple of weeks of the season and into the conference tournament, and I believe into the regionals, and they got drafted it during the super regionals. So, you know, it's a fun time because now we get to see these prospects that, you know, kind of get lost in the regular season shuffle, but they're going to be on a whole bigger stage. Just, you know, Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens are going to be on a much bigger stage. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely. And with talking about young kids in collegiate baseball, I think that's a perfect time to swing into our final segment of Young Lad of the Week. So again, the criteria for this Young Lad of the Week, anybody in college baseball, because they're young, they're students. Or in Peter's case, he might switch the nod a little bit and go on somebody maybe who's a little lower than the collegiate level. Or it could be someone at the major league level who's maybe in their first year or two. So I'll start because I got a little bit of a more well-known name, and I feel like Peter's going to have a little bit more knowledge on his guy. So my young lad of the week is a guy who we really haven't talked about on this podcast that much and was really the headline of the weekend in the SEC, and that is Jack Caglione is my young lad of the week. How about the Mother's Day for this guy? Not only does he go 2-for-3, and helps Vandy and helps Florida secure a sweep of number 5 Vandy. By the way, Florida going into that weekend was number 7. But he throws 6 2/3 innings on the mound, giving up just one hit, a run, walking one, and tying a season high in strikeouts with 9. And Florida, with that sweep over Vandy, now takes first place in the East Division in the SEC by 1 game over Vandy. And the Gators are now ranked 4th in the country. So my young lad of the week is Jack Caglione. Peter, who's yours?
Yeah, before I say mine, because I do have 3. I already said 1 in Jordan Williams with Florida State walking off Wake Forest. But I think you know how after the draft, everybody has the way too early, you know, prospect rankings for the next draft. I think yes. Jack Caglione will be the number 1 prospect going into next year.
Looks like it.
I think he'll be the number 1 two-way prospect, too, because what, he's got 25 home runs?
He has 27 home runs?
I know it's close to 30.
Yeah, it's 27. And I believe,
so he's,
if I'm correct, does that lead the nation?
I don't think it leads the nation.
Let's see. I got it.
I think
it
somebody
right
has 30.
Here. Statistic. Shout out
I
to
think
the
somebody has 30.
Shout out to the internet. No, Jack Caglione does lead the nation in homers in 27.
He does.
Yes. It is.
So
it is Jack Caglione in first with 22nd. Shane Lewis of Troy is behind him with 26. Charlie Condon's got 24. And then it's a three-way tie for 4th with Brock Wilkin headlining that trio in 4th.
Yeah. So I think he's going to be the way too early number 1 prospect, and he's going to have all this hype going around him. And he might be, you know, one of the best hitting prospects, or get quoted as the best hitting prospect that we've seen in a while since, I don't know who. I don't know who would be Bryce Harper, maybe. I don't know. Just throwing a name out there. So, anyways, a little shout out to my alma mater. And they're young lads, which is kind of ironic to say because they probably have some guys on that team that are older than me, and I'm 25. But they won their conference tournament this year. Again, the Sun Conference Tournament for NAIA. They were supposed to play today against the number 4 seed in their regional, but it got rained out, so it got pushed back till tomorrow. Or for people listening to this on a Tuesday, it's getting played on Tuesday at 2:30 Central Time. So I'm going to try to sneak a peek at that as I'm, you know, finishing up with the gym and just some things around the house. But they won their Sun Conference tournament again, look primed to make another return to Lewistown, Idaho at the site of the NAIA World Series. But then my best for last. So I talked about it in the beginning of this episode that I coached a team this last Saturday. I couldn't do it Sunday because it was Mother's Day and I already had plans on Sunday for Mother's Day that, you know, I couldn't necessarily get out of, and I didn't really necessarily want to get out of them. but I made these plans a while ago. So I went there on Saturday. We go 0-2 in those games, lose by a combined 3 runs. And then Sunday, they win 4 straight games to win the U-Trip 12U championship. So my young lads of the week, my number one star, if you want to put it in hockey terms, is the 12U Hawkins MVP baseball team. Congratulations, boys. Hopefully they're listening to this. They're probably not. But I'll see them on Wednesday and Thursday, so it'll be cool to celebrate that championship win with them.
Well, teach them what Spotify is, and in that celebration, instead of champagne, maybe you could hose everyone down with some apple juice, maybe. And congratulations to your Hawkins 12U on that. That's a good lineup you got there for young lads of the week. And there's going to be plenty more of that. If you have a young lad of the week, tweet at us. You can search us on Twitter. We're not going to give you the handles because it's very easy to find us. So, you know, that's us. I believe that's all we got here for episode 4. We actually did an episode that we thought was going to be short, probably as long as all the other episodes have been. So, you know, goes to show we like running our mouths, and we hope you're entertained. We hope you're entertained listening to us run our mouths. So, again, on this Monday night, the 15th, I think we're going to sign off. We got some big things coming here with college baseball coming up. I know some of my guys' seasons are about to end, so we're going to get some guests on the podcast, especially when the regionals start. Also, in 2 weeks, I'm going to head up to Wrigley Field when the Rays are playing the Cubs. Going to go chat with our mentors and our former current colleagues, Neil and Andy at Wrigley Field. That is a planned trip. It's a far drive. You never know what can happen. So if the wheels stay on the vehicle, we will head into Chicago and go say hello to the fellas. And we hope to get them on the podcast at some point and many more guests. So, Peter, any final remarks on this post-Mother's Day Monday?
No, just looking forward to hopefully a sweep of the Mets for the Rays, getting on the right track. And when they come back to Tropicana Field for this weekend series, and it's been a long 10-day road trip for them, so hopefully they come back after this series healthy and they can just continue their dominance at home.
My buddy texted me saying that he's going to a Rays game next week. He said, which lot to park in? I said, any one of them. I don't really think there's a bad lot to park in at the Trop.
No, I mean, they're all pretty much the same. They're all gonna lead you into the Trop. So
they're all $20 and they're all cashless. So keep that in mind. So with that, we will wrap it up here on Young Lads episode 4. Give us a like, share this with your buddies, share it with your fellow young lads, and we hope you keep listening and we hope you're enjoying. And if you got any ideas, you know, feel free to leave a comment. You know, subscribe, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever the heck you listen to your podcast. It's all the same. Audio quality is great. Thanks to Peter, who edits these bad boys up. And we'll have this one out, you know, in relatively quick fashion. So I'm Harris.
And I'm Peter.
And this was Young Lads episode 4. And we'll have episode 5 next week. So enjoy yourselves and enjoy your baseball.